This is the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, helping you run your restaurant better.
Welcome back to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. I thank everyone of our listeners out there for joining us for another fantastic episode. Today is going to be a treat for me, selfishly, because I've been following this guy. I've known this guy that we're going to introduce to our audience for quite some time. And he's got tons and tons and tons of insight that I know is going to help help our audience to run a better business. And so I'm going to introduce everyone to Dave Bennett. Dave, why don't you give everybody a little bit of an understanding of who you are, and then we can talk about what you get to do every day in your day job.
Sure. CEO at Mears Restaurant Solutions. And we started operations about almost 23 years ago, 1999. And so we help multi-unit operations collect the growing disparity of data around their business so that they have a single place to look at results, evaluate what's working, what's not working, adjust plans, and so forth.
Love it. Love it. I guess for those that aren't familiar with who you are, give me a little bit about your background, work history. Were you one of the founders? Have you just been there for 20 plus years? Talk to me a little bit about that so that you can give a little bit of insight for those that aren't familiar with you on the personal / professional level.
Yeah, and like a lot of your folks that you interview, my career is pretty weird, pretty common in the restaurant industry. Mm-hmm. I've been in or around restaurants since my first job at high school. We're in the paper hat at McDonald's. And, for the longest time, I didn't see the restaurant industry as being in my future. But then I, at college, took some programming courses, key punch cards, Fortran, 1974, long before there were screens or anything like we see today. And coming out of college, of all companies, Dunkin' Donuts was the one that offered me more than any other company to program COBOL. So that's where it started, restaurant industry and technology, and I've been there ever since through 15, 16 years at Dunkin', Baskin, Dunkin' Brands, whatever. And then 5-6 years at IBM, which was really cool, an opportunity to work with a lot of the big players in the industry, McDonald's and Wendy's and Burger King and just a bunch of companies. And showed up here in Houston in 2000. I am not a founder of the company. The two guys that founded Mears were local here to Houston. And they had generated seed funding in 1999, began operations. And their first customer happened to be Commander's Palace, of all things.
Interesting.
A restaurant company. They didn't expect that to be the case. It just happened that way. And they were really set up to be kind of the ERP platform in the cloud for lots of industries. And but because their first customer was a restaurant company, they wanted restaurant industry knowledge. And that's how I was introduced to the founders through a recruiter. And I was on my way out of IBM, basically to start my own company at that point. So when I found that, there were two guys in Houston that already got funding, it's like, well, geez, I can skip that step and just get in to build the thing, right? And so I had my business plan. It took me a few weeks to convince the founders to throw their business plan away and adopt my business plan, which focused only on the restaurants. Their original plan was like 16 verticals or something. So we dove in both feet in restaurant space, and that was all 22 years ago or so. And we were so far ahead of the market, far ahead of where the restaurant industry was looking at the time. Terms like data warehousing, enterprise data warehouse, analytics, they weren't the common phrases in 2021 that they are. I mean, 2001 that they are now, and so we probably could have started the company a decade later, and probably never suffered too much of a negative. But we did learn a ton during that first decade. And luckily, we were able to get a couple of great anchor accounts that kept us floating. And in the last decade, a lot has changed. The original investors wanted an exit. In 2016, I formed a partnership with a couple of other guys here in the company. And we bought out the shareholders at the end of 2016. So the last 5+ years has been owning it as well as operating it. So but the founder role belongs to a couple of other guys.
Got you. Well, thank you for that history. And I know you kind of bounced around a little bit about what Meris is. For those that may not be familiar with what, terms like data warehousing and all of that is, I know that we've had some previous guests. You and I talked about a pre-show with somebody that I know is doing a lot on the data side. But what is a data warehouse? And we'll get into really why people need it and what does it do for you here in the but why don't you define some of those terms that says, for the layman that might not quite have it or understand it, we realize that point of sale and the transactions that are going in through the restaurant, point of sale and loyalty and gift and just all of that stuff are all data points to be able to make better business decisions. Sure. And you've got to be able to figure out how to get those all together. So why don't you talk to our audience a little bit about what that is and do a little education there?
So a metaphor might help. So, if you think about old pictures from the 70s, 80s, 90s of the stock market, right? A bunch of guys in funny looking coats and there's paper all over the floor and they're writing transactions and they're buying and selling and it's chaos, right? And that's the restaurant industry, right? You're buying raw material, you're hiring people, you're selling good tasting food, you're a lot of transactions going on. And the papers fly in as those transactions are completed. And at the end of the day, everybody goes home and the stock market's empty and the sweeper comes in and starts sweeping up all of the paper on the floor. And by the time everybody comes back in the morning, all that information has been neatly organized so that people who really want to understand what the heck happened, what was good, what was not good, what can be corrected, what can be replicated, those decisions can start being made because the information is no longer just sitting on the floor waiting for somebody else to come along and pick up these things, but it's ready to go. So in our case, for restaurant companies, their technology stack, the number of applications used in a restaurant, and I don't mean literally in a restaurant, anywhere in a restaurant company, because the payroll system, the general ledger, and all of those enterprise systems are as much a transactional engine as all of the other things like point of sale or inventory management, labor scheduling, any of those things. So in the world of data, there's two types of systems categorically. There's transactional and analytic. And Meris is an analytic system. So we're kind of like the sweeper that comes around after the transaction's been completed. We don't have a role to play while the customer is sitting at the table or at the counter, and they're determining which menu items to order. We play no role in that at all. Now, immediately after that transaction is completed, we're interested in collecting that transaction as quickly after it occurs so that our clients can see as quickly as we can do it, what's happening at lunchtime, what's happening at dinner time today, not just yesterday. So data collection is core to our mission. If we can't collect the data, then analytics has no value. The data collection is a challenge primarily because we promise our clients any data from any system, right? So we truly are agnostic as it relates to data. It doesn't matter if it's a spreadsheet. We've taken printed reports and extracted data off of printed reports. We don't enjoy doing that.
Yeah, so you don't love that. You don't love that world.
That's not strategic to us. But, those are some of the things we learned in that first decade. How do you reconstitute data? Mm-hmm. Because sometimes it literally is on a piece of paper laying on the floor. And you need to digitize that again, right? And nowadays, there's a handful of companies that are back in that optical character recognition business, right? Yep. For voice processing and things like that. And so data collection is core to our mission. You know, we were starting back when broadband didn't exist, right? Mm-hmm. That's why we didn't have a pipe. It was dial-up modems and all of that fun stuff. So things have gotten easier, I guess, in that regard. Today's API models certainly improve reliability and reduce loss of access to data and things like that. So the next part is probably equally important, if not more important, and that is for every restaurant company, there's a way they run the business. Right?
Yep.
They have things like a fiscal calendar, right? They have an operating week. They have a payroll cycle. They have, right? There's stakes in the ground that distinguish one operator from another operator, even though they may both be selling hamburgers or whatever. And those we call business rules or you know, the things that make one operator unique from another. And sometimes that is their calculation of net sales. Right. And because, you know, maybe they're a franchisor and maybe their franchisees are allowed to sell other things like newspapers or whatever that aren't part of the royalty calculation. So net sales has to be manipulated, has to be aware that, we don't count those things when we talk about net sales. We call those business rules. Right. Those are the unique things about each operator. That is critical to them. If you're going to show them information about their restaurants, you better conform to all of these rules and norms that they're used to. And so we collect the data, we apply all of that normalization so that things are organized the way that the operator is most used to seeing it. And then we give them a set of tools for reporting, alerting, creating dashboards, doing ad hoc analysis, you know, which means ad hoc, crazy term. It just means somebody has just asked a very interesting question in a meeting. How many of our locations that do this also have this occur?
Mm-hmm. Right?
It's an interesting question. Nobody has a clue what the answer is. People have opinions. Well, it's probably not a big deal or that's a big deal, but no factual information. And within minutes after the walking out of that meeting, they could actually get a factual answer to the question, how many of their restaurants that have A occurring also have B occurring, right?
Yep.
And it is that freedom to go explore your business and in the pursuit of increased performance, improved performance. That is really what we're set up to do. We firmly believe restaurant operators are great problem solvers. The key is always make the problem visible. Once they see the problem, that is why they're restaurant operators,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
They know how to solve problems. Mm-hmm. Sometimes seeing what the issue is, you might see symptoms, but you're not necessarily seeing the underlying issue, right? So getting to the core, getting to the causality, why are things going either really, really well or really poorly, requires examining information at a very detailed level in many cases. And, labor is a perfect example of that, right? We have a metric in the industry, labor is a percent of sales. And one of the most popular metrics out there, and I'm not a fan. Just not a fan. I mean, there are times where it's useful and it's appropriate,
mm-hmm.
but it's used in too many situations where it should not be used. And for example, if you were evaluating a restaurant's performance yesterday and you just looked at labor as a percent of sales for the day, you really have no idea how good of a job or how bad of a job the management team did throughout the day yesterday. Because the devil's in the details. It isn't the summary number that's important. It's answering the question, were there hours yesterday where the management team have an opportunity to do a better job, a more effective job next Tuesday?
Yeah.
Wednesday. And that's a key part of how our clients take advantage of the platform to focus on the area of their business that it is top of mind for them. You know, and that's probably related to budgets and probably related to a bunch of other planning, strategic planning going on. And those things evolve over time. So what the key metrics are this year might be different next year or this quarter to next quarter.
Well, and I think it's funny because you and I have been in this industry, around the same amount of time. At least on the technology side, I started in the late 90s, same, and it was always interesting to me. You brought up one point, and I think some of our listeners, I'd love to bring it back to it, is, you know, people might say, well, why do you have different calculations on net sales? Why do you have different calculations for labor percentage? And it's always interesting to me because, you know, people that are outside the industry or people that are new to restaurants or people that have only grown up in the Dunkin' system or the McDonald's system or that's been their entire career. Just playing golf with somebody from In-N-Out the other day, and like, he sees the way the world In-N-Out sees it, and In-N-Out does things differently than Burger King, and Burger King does something different than McDonald's. It's interesting to me that you brought up that whole net calculation, because every one of our clients just the same, whether it's net sales calculations or, you know, any number of things, they look at it differently based on how they run their business and how they operate. And so I love that you brought that up. And I'd love to have you talk a little bit about not necessarily the how Mira solves that, but why do you think restaurant operators see those things so differently after 20 plus years? And, you know, because I do think it drives the needle for some of them. I do think it drives how they're operating their business and how they're engaging with their employees and how they're engaging with their guests and the like. So give me your opinion on why you think that there's so much disparity on how people see their data and deal with their data, which then really drives into why Miris is an awesome solution for being able to do that, because you can do ad hoc reporting and you can configure the business rules a million different ways from Sunday. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's it's been a question throughout my career. You know, net sales is a really good example, but it persists across the board. So why what's the logic for two companies that are in similar businesses? They're selling a menu of food using a fast casual format. They're in line, they're an end cap, they're very similar businesses. Why would one have a net sales different than the other? And, you know, I think, you know, the business school answer is there is no good reason. Jordan probably would say there is no good reason.
Yep.
It drove him crazy when he was, you know, back early in his industry learning curve, all of this diversity. But I think it comes out of some of the fundamentals. I don't think there is an intellectual answer to that question. I think it's a result of some of the other factors that make this industry quite unique. It's the largest private employer in the U.S. economy, but it's also highly distributed by its nature, right? Each box is its own. And in each box, the one-mile radius around that box is also unique, box to box. So it's very distributed, it's very unique location to location. And I think people to succeed in the restaurant business, as we were talking earlier, you know, they have to become great problem solvers, right? Because your customers will point out to you what works, what doesn't work, whatever. And you become very, very adept at problem solving. And, you know, I think it's habitual. I think the net sales, they become convinced is the right calculation. Yeah.
Guest calculation is another one that I look at brands and guest count, guest count calculation, especially in brands that, I think of people and it's like, well, what is a large pizza? How many guests is a large pizza?
Yeah.
Is it two guests? Is it three guests? Is it four guests?
Five.
Yeah, exactly. But it's 3.75 guests. We don't have 7.75. But to your point, I think it's, I want to make sure that I talk to our audience, because there's so many of them are restaurant operators or what we call, you know, so we have a theory in our business. And I'd love your take on this, Dave. We look to three different customers within the restaurant brand. Customer number one is the guy that's the boots on the ground, that's dealing with the guest face to face, dealing with that transaction. that guest, you know, that person that's the cashier, that's the manager in the store, that's the cook, you know, the chef, whoever, that's customer number one. Customer number two is the data receivers, the people that are at corporate. It's the finance group. It's the HR group. It's the, and then customer number three are what we call the integrators, the people that are trying to get in to touch the point of sale system or touch the data systems, the third party delivery companies, the data analytics companies. I would consider Marius kind of one of those where they're customer number three because they need to get to the data that you talked about to be able to help this business to deliver the numbers to the customer number two. You know, and I think it's funny because every customer number one operates differently within that brand. A lot of customer number twos, you know, the finance guy, the CFO, the CEO, they believe, whether it's correct or not, that their way of looking at things is the right way to look at things in order to drive the business to the level that they want to get them to.
Yeah. Well, I had a CFO conversation a couple weeks ago. And that CFO had come into this restaurant company from the outside the industry.
Okay.
And I asked them what their fiscal calendar was.
Sorry, I'm laughing because I think to myself, restaurants operate so differently than most. Sorry, I'll let you keep going.
There was just a silence.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, "We don't have one." And I said, "Really? So you compare March to March, right? Even though one March might have more Saturday nights and Friday nights in it than the other March, you would compare March to March, knowing that they're not homogeneous, that they're not comparable. What a silly thing to do. You know, that's a 1980s thing, right?
Yep.
But it's still there, right? So it's, as I said, it's pervasive. It isn't just the net sales calculation. It's just labor matrices, right? Everybody's got their own idea of what optimal labor looks like. And that should be brand specific. Not only brand specific, that needs to be specific to the box, right?
To the location itself. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Because the floor plan makes a huge difference in terms of use of time.
And the traffic, you know, you're in a downtown area, lunch is going to be busier than dinner time. And, you know, sure.
And even the check details might be different, right?
Yeah.
You might, as you said, in an urban location, there might be a whole lot of to-go orders versus a suburban location where it's much more heated, right? And the product mix differences will drive to a different labor number.
Yep.
But I don't see enough examples of companies taking advantage of the data they already have, right? They've been collecting it for a decade or more, and they don't
use it
into it. Yeah. And so, the other characteristic, the other thing that I'll you know is just a curiosity, is and it's a legacy thing. It's kind of core to what people think of it, when they think of chain restaurant companies, and that is the cookie cutter approach.
Yeah.
Right? That this solution, we just dreamed up a new solution. We're going to change our labor model, or we're going to, you know, whatever, change a menu, or add a drive-through, or whatever. And we're going to do it across all the locations, right? Because that's the only way I know how to think. Because everything's the same. And, as I said earlier, each location is quite unique, even in McDonald's. Or Starbucks or whatever. Each location is quite unique. It has a very unique 1 mile radius in terms of demographics, in terms of ethnicity, all kinds of wonderful things, right? And, you know, frequency of dining in, eating at home versus eating out, cultural differences, all of those things. But there's so many folks in the restaurant industry that just want to implement the same solution the same way in every restaurant. And there are times where that's almost oxymoronic.
Yeah.
Right? That you have evidence that these two locations are fundamentally different. This is a dinner-oriented location. This is a lunch-dominated location.
Yep.
Right? And you've got an average check difference. You've got a transactional count difference.
There's a demographic difference. All of that.
Right. So you throw the same solution into both. One might do well. It's unlikely both will do well. Right. And the solution is exception based but really micro focus. Right. Yeah. Location by location by location. Labor scheduling, by the way, is the best example I've found on this. We've done quite a bit of work looking at projections, right? What's the future going to look like?
Yep.
And we've been we've developed a handful, a little more, a set of algorithms for figuring out how many people will you need next Thursday at lunch, right? And what we found was no single algorithm. There are, in fact, different algorithms that are needed depending on the characteristics of the restaurant.
Yeah.
The operators aren't ready for that. What do you mean we're going to use a different equation for doing the forecast at this location than this other location? Well, let's look at the mean error rate of this equation versus this equation at this location. And you'll pick the one that produces the smallest error, right? That is closer to being what reality ends up delivering, right? Because there is no such thing as accuracy in a projection. It's a projection. Mm-hmm. It can't be accurate. It hasn't happened yet, right? So it's
well, and you've got me, Dave, on a string that I was going to bring up here just a few minutes ago, and I'm going to jump there, not to cut you off, but I think you mentioned it. The amount of data that operators have been collecting is almost infinitesimal. I mean, not infinitesimal. It's almost infinite. The amount of data that they have is extraordinary. You've alluded to it, and I think I'm in agreement that so few of them actually use the data to make better business decisions. Talk to me about the advent of computing power, machine learning, and AI, and really what you mentioned, logarithms, it's an older phrase that really talks to machine learning and AI, but those are the hot phrases in the industry that are really going to deliver those data-driven decisions back to those operators. Educate our audience a little bit about how much that has grown, because I think way too often they set something, forget it, and don't ever go look back at, did it actually work? Did it do what it was supposed to do? And how do I need to pivot? Because like you mentioned earlier in the conversation, the minute you show them a problem, restaurant operators, good restaurant operators specifically, automatically go into action mode. I'm going to solve this problem now because I know how to solve this problem. But if they don't know about it, or they don't believe the data, or they don't use the data, they don't go there. So talk to me a little bit about how you guys have been able to get people to use the data, to present it to them in a way that's really going to drive these better business decisions. Because ultimately, I know from my own data, I guarantee you, if you guys were to really look at it, you could look and say, that restaurant brand is going to struggle 18 months from now because they haven't figured out how to do this unless they make this change, or vice versa. You know, we know it. We've been doing it for 20 plus years. Talk to me a little bit about, one, how you guys have helped people get there, as well as how much data we're collecting to be able to use these logarithms, machine learning, and AI to be able to drive the behavior that we want to see within the restaurant industry.
Well, you know, the promise of AI, the promise of machine learning is, you can think of it as being able to see what we can't see today, right? And because it is all just patterns, right? It's data. And the data has explicit information, such as what was the check amount, but it has pattern information. When those patterns exist at a certain frequency, then shifts occur, right? And so I think for the restaurant industry, there's huge application for AI and machine learning. I think, where are we in relation to other industries? We're in our normal position, a decade or two behind other industries in the use of information. I think, the big new domain for the restaurant industry, the thing that virtually nobody other than companies like Domino's and Pizza Hut had 20 years ago, is the customer domain.
Yep.
And I mean, McDonald's literally didn't know who their customers were 20 years ago. They had a loyalty program, but back then it didn't represent all McDonald's customers. And restaurant companies in general simply didn't know the email address, the cell phone number, the name of these customers that are coming through every day. And, you know, lots of companies have participated in the collection and digital capture of customer information. And that opens up a whole, you know, different area of analytics. You know, you can use terms like, life value of a customer.
Yep.
You know, and concepts like that that have existed in retail for a long time, but not in restaurants, right? And so I think we are where we are. We have a lot to learn. There's a lot of good stuff that will come out of, you know, the work over the next 5 to 10 years. But in terms of, you were getting to it a moment ago. You know, there's a it takes energy to get the restaurant industry to change,
yep.
Right? And different companies, different people require different amounts of energy to propel them to move. And some are early adopters, and that is those early adopters in the Miris client set. Those folks who, as we refer to them, get it.
Uh-huh.
You know, or as they embrace analytics, they understand the power and the value of the data. They're often the pioneers. And, when I look at our product today and some of the analytic features we offer, most of them came, the origination of the idea didn't come from us. It came from clients.
Came from a restaurant.
Who were trying to use the data to achieve something.
Or they ask you a question to say, how do I find this out? And you go, oh, I can write that. I know I have the data elements. I just haven't presented them in a way that make them actionable.
So one of our clients wanted to know, wanted to be able to ask questions like, what's the average check of all the checks that contain these items but don't include these items?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, market basket reporting.
Yeah, exactly, yep. Right? And that was like, now that was quite a long time ago. That was like 17 years ago. But so we developed an analytic that allows our clients to look at the contents of the check, which isn't just the menu items, right? It's the name of the server, the table number, the date timestamps, the day part, the tender, any discounts or promos or comps on the check. There's the guest check is a complicated carrier mm-hmm. of data. And so being able to say, geez, for all our credit card customers at lunch through the drive-through window, how many of them are not buying a drink?
Uh-huh.
Right? So maybe an irrelevant question to many restaurant companies, but if that's an important question to your company today, you want to be able to be accurate. Right, you don't want to just rely on instincts or experience or whatever,
mm-hmm.
Because you never know when you're going to get surprised, when the data is going to show you something that, oh my God, I never would have guessed that. Right, and I remember early on, 2003, 2004, showing an operator of 500-600 restaurants that they had a huge theft problem.
Yeah,
I mean, there was just it wasn't everywhere. I mean, there were many restaurants who had no theft issues visible, but there were the ones who were exhibiting behavior like they almost believed they couldn't get caught.
Or yeah. Whatever.
They didn't take action. And that was like a wake up call because, show them the problem and they'll solve the problem was violated there. So we showed them a problem. We went back, showed them a second and third time there was a problem, and they still didn't act.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
And it's beliefs, right? People don't steal. We hire good people.
Yeah.
Whatever. Well, the data is clearly telling you, this cashier, right? We can show you the name of the person.
Yeah.
This is the behavior we're seeing. Explain this list of activity to us. How
so interesting.
This be correct.
Sorry, it reminds me of a phrase that somebody said to me the other day. You know, every person in prison was a good person to someone. You know, it's like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, pretty much. So
there's somebody's baby, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, they were somebody's kid.
Right. So it's getting folks to behave differently around data, embracing the data, trusting the data. You know, mm-hmm. in many cases that, you know, folks have earlier experience with other systems or other, you know, IT investments that were disappointing and they didn't deliver the results. So there's a skepticism that exists out there and well-earned skepticism in many cases.
So that impacts people's decision-making.
Yeah, you can empathize.
Yeah, no, for sure. I have one more train of thought that I'd love to get your riff on, because I hear this from customers. I'm certain you hear this from customers, is, you know, why go find a third-party analytics data system rather than going with the one that comes with my point-of-sale system or comes with my loyalty system or comes with my system there? You know, you talked about 17 years ago, you had this market basket report that, quite frankly, many point-of-sale systems don't even have today, right. You know, in that analytics. And so I'm guessing you're going to say, we're going to do it better, we're going to do it smarter, we're going to do it faster. But you've got a lot of people that go, you know, I don't have time to look at this stuff, I don't have time to do anything with this stuff, or it just sits there on the shelf. Talk to me a little bit about the value proposition of why Meris or any of the other competitors you guys compete with in the space should restaurant operators and restaurant owners that are on this call, restaurant technologists, consider something like that.
Our competitive map, everybody competes with Meris. Right? Mm-hmm. I hear it all the time. Salespeople of other companies saying, oh, yeah, we can do it with Meris stuff. Not having a clue, you know, that at a technical level, there's no way possible they could do what we do. But, if they believe that, that's fine. So we have lots and lots of competitors. Our biggest competitor, the way we see the world, our biggest competitor is the chain restaurant company that wants to build their own enterprise data warehouse.
Yep.
And they use tools like Cognos or MicroStrategy or Microsoft's BI stack as tools for building out that. So to us, that's the alternative.
Uh-huh.
Or at least for many companies, that's the alternative. As it relates to POS vendors, back of house vendors, other vendors, they can build dashboards and alerts and they can apply some machine learning to the data they have. But the data they have is defined by the application they've built.
Yep.
And if they're a point of sale, vendor, then they have a lot of sales and labor information, some cash information maybe. But they don't have necessarily any clue directly about customer feedback, or they don't have any clue about the profitability of the operation, whether that's a food cost or an occupancy or whatever. When it comes to data, studying a silo of data can create value. There's no question. And that's where everybody's a competitor to Meris. Whatever data their application naturally touches, they of course have reports and they can put that information on dashboards and whatever. The reality about data is every time you add another set of data to the pool that you already have, the value of all of the data, not just the data you added, but all of the other data, the value goes up, primarily because you've now given another, it's like triangulation.
Yep.
Right? When you're trying to estimate something, if you have a third data point to do reasonableness testing with, then you're more confident that, yes, we're seeing this the right way. And so the fourth, the fifth, the 12th data point, there's not many decisions that need 12 perspectives. But, you know, we have been tracking this since the beginning. And early on, it was just POS integration.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was POS back office. Then it was, oh, we got this labor scheduling thing. And, oh, my drive-through timers, my kitchen display systems. That's how it all started blowing out. And then, oh, my payroll system, my GL. GL, wonderful transactional application. Horrible when it comes to really studying.
Yes, absolutely.
Returning information, right? It's not flexible. It's rigid, and it's supposed to be rigid because it has to enforce accounting rules and all of that. So the reason, you should cut your teeth using the systems you have for sure. Learn what it is that you're trying to get out of that application in the way of studying the data. But the power, the magnifier, if you will, in terms of value, is being able to bring all of your data across the enterprise and know that not only does the data from this application point us in this direction, but we have data from two or three other systems that are also indicating that that direction is the right direction, right? And it's all about confidence. It's about certainty before you make a move, because in today's market, we're more competitive than we've ever been. We're now a mature industry, have been now for 20 years. And a mistake is more expensive today, especially during an inflationary period. Your food costs are going up, your labor costs are going up, construction costs are crazy right now. The cost of a mistake is more deadly today than it was, say, 7 years ago.
If you're not doing it, oftentimes your competitors are doing it. So you got to be careful, because if you're not using that data, it's a thing that you just got to be careful about.
Yeah, COVID, gave us a unique opportunity to study our clients and how our clients were different than the industry overall. And we were always proud when we compared. We have a benchmark number called Mirus Index. Mm-hmm. And it's really just an amalgamation of our clients' data de-identified, so that we can measure, what's the same store sales for yesterday compared to the same day a year ago across all of our clients, and then compare that number to some of the other industry benchmark numbers that are out there. And we have consistently over the decades outperformed the industry. Our clients have outperformed, whether that's in traffic growth, sales growth, profit. So we've always enjoyed that, and that's the purpose, right? Mm-hmm. It's about
making better business decisions and exactly having better behavior.
Exactly right. In the issues that are facing you today, they're going to pivot. And by August, we're going to be, wrestling with other issues.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. Well, Dave, we're getting to the end of our recording time. How would people get in touch with you? They've heard you, you've educated them, and they want to know more about Mirus. How can Mirus help their business? What would you suggest as far as next steps? Just jump on the website and put in a lead, hit you up on, LinkedIn. Talk to me a little bit about how you would want the audience to engage with you and your team.
Well, whichever is most convenient. The website, mirus.com, mirus.com, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. We try to be everywhere, but you'll find us all over the place. And you certainly could communicate through the website or at email. You can send a note to sales@mirus.com or even info@mirus.com, and folks will respond and get back to you to answer any question that you might ask. But we have a chat bot that's up on the website for, simple questions that you're just curious about. And those get responded to typically within minutes of people asking things. So it's try to be everywhere for all people. But nowadays, the landscape just keeps expanding.
Well, Dave, I can't thank you enough for not just the education about what Mirus does, but quite frankly, you've got, decades of industry experience that I think our audience is going to take from it. And, as I say often at the end of these podcasts, even if you're not partnering with Mirus, you've got to solve the problems that Mirus is solving for you. Because at the end of the day, if you're not solving them, your competitors are solving them. I'd love for you guys to consider using, looking at Mirus's tools. And known Dave, as I said, on the onset for a number of years, and that him and his team do a fantastic job of helping clients out.
Well, thank you very much, Jeremy, for asking me to participate this morning. It's your podcast celebrating 150 episodes.
Of yes, sir. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Tremendous achievement. So thanks again for inviting us to spend some time to talk.
Awesome. Well, to our audience, guys, we know that you guys have got lots of choices, so we appreciate you guys spending time with us each and every week when we post one of these. To Dave, thank you very much. And to our audience, make it a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Visit restauranttechnologyguys.com for tips, industry insights, and more to help you run your restaurant better.